The Bengals Beat podcast is proudly sponsored by 50 West Brewing Company. Now is the time to head out to the production works. It's where we've held our live BBPs. It's home to the incomparable madness that is the 50 West Punch-Out. The place is buzzing every night with sand volleyball leagues, canoeing, kayaking, cycling, trivia, running groups. It's all based out of the Pro Works down on Wooster Pike. You may even spot Optimistic Bobby preaching the Laser Cats gospel. Hope to see you soon at 50 West, where every beer is a journey. Come join for the ride. Welcome into the BBP. This is the Cincinnati Inquirer's Bengals Beat podcast, sponsored by 50 West Brewing Company.
Every week, your Cincinnati.com Bengals beat writers, that dumb fish who doesn't trust his gut, Paul Dana Jr., and Fletcher Page take you inside the walls of Paul Brown Stadium.
We're plugged into the club from the front office to the field. Win or lose, hiring or firing, we're always here to keep you in the loop. Let's go. All right, welcome into the latest edition of the BBP, the Bengals Beat Podcast, presented as always by 50 West Brewing Company, your Bengals beat writer, Cincinnati.com, Cincinnati Inquirer, Fletcher Page, and I'm Paul Dana Jr. As you found out in the open, I'm a gutless fish who doesn't trust his gut. It's sad. It's sad. I hope people like, you know what, we feel like we may with this whole open, names in the open thing, have stumbled onto a potential future gag going forward.
I didn't want it to be like this.
It is, though.
I didn't want it to happen this way. But I think moving forward, we may be onto something.
We may be onto something. Because I feel like this is a great opportunity for whenever we have a disagreement or some sort of friendly wager. The stakes can always be being able to pick what the other comes in front of the other person's name in the intro for that week. I think that's good quality. Something really on the line there.
Oh, it's good deflection for me because I didn't want the intro to be tied to such a heartbreaking loss.
Right.
And so now,
anytime they heard your name said correctly, they'd have thought about
Antonio Brown
running
free
with no one near him.
So now we'll go week to week.
Week to week, it'll change. If you have ideas of things that you want us to be called, please keep them clean. And feel free to send them to us on Twitter at Paul Dana Jr. at Fletcher Page. We always love your suggestions, as you know. We have plenty to get to on the BBP, the OG this week, because a lot is happening. First of all, we will tie a little bit of a bow around the Steelers because there's still a lot of chatter about play calling, about what happened, about leaving too much time, about not taking timeouts, about not going for it on fourth and one. Some of the stuff we talked about in the walkout, but a little bit more in depth and some good reaction stuff, particularly on some of the play calling from Terrell Austin. From Marvin Lewis saying, NFL, Al Riveron, you wrong. I mean, that's paraphrasing.
In my opinion, you're wrong.
In my opinion, you're wrong. Head of officials. I mean, so we'll get into some of that stuff. I want to get into Vontaze Burfict's latest, just always in the middle of something. Luke doesn't think he's going to be suspended, but probably going to get another fine, and there's some other things to talk about with him. Including, I think, kind of a moral dilemma that I think Bengals fans should find themselves in with him a little bit. We'll dive into some of that. Future of this defense, as they're very banged up, going to play high-flying Pat Mahomes and Kansas City and Tyreek Hill. And holy Moses, that looks like it. They're running right into a grinder.
Yeah, Cincinnati's had a weird front end here where they're playing teams like Atlanta and Kansas City that score 37 or 40 and lose games.
Yeah. Yeah, they bet they need to hope that Kansas City has a lot of similarities to Atlanta, except I would say they're better on offense than Atlanta and better on defense than Atlanta. Slightly.
Mm-hmm.
But very similar makeup. We'll get into that. PFF, of course, will be back. We can talk to Austin Gale. Quite a few really interesting PFF numbers, a few that I dived in, particularly on Monday. When you look at blitzing in relation to what happened in that last play, they'd be getting gouged all day. PFF has some really great numbers on that. Austin will dive into that with me. We'll have your three questions and plenty more. All right, let's open by tying one final bow around a few topics that are still out there about Bengals Steelers. And the first being, you know, the fourth and one call in the third quarter. On the walkout, we went into that a little bit about thought it was really weak. Basically, at a certain point, you've got to take chances. What did you make of how Marvin defended that when questioned on it on Monday?
I thought it was pretty predictable. If you didn't want to punt, you should have got it on third and one. You know, it's kind of a football coach answer. Had a chance on third and one, couldn't get it. Now, the running game only had three plays all game, though, where they didn't gain a yard.
Mm-hmm.
And that was one of them, the third and one. So then Marvin said it was a fourth and two. I'll call it fourth one and a half.
A long one?
Yeah. I think we know what happened. The punt was 28 yards, fair catch at the two. Steelers drive down.
The
12.
Yeah.
Steelers drive down, kick a field goal, take the lead.
Should have been a touchdown.
Right. So I think now we have to answer in today's football climate, the game, how much is 28 yards worth?
Right. It's nothing.
It's nothing, I think.
The Steelers ran up 482.
Right.
Right? And you see that number, and there are people across the league that wouldn't even be aghast by that number anymore. Like, throwing for 360-something yards is like, oh, whatever, it wasn't even 400.
Yeah, so that they basically punted for one Juju Smith-Schuster completion. You know,
correct.
So
on a day when your defense is, his words, decimated,
right,
and your offense was moving pretty good. Last 2 years, they have converted about 58% of their between third and one and two. I'll give them let's just say two. I looked up third and two or third and one or fourth and one or fourth and two. They convert about 58% chance. And so if you get the first down there on the 40, you're getting points. Almost certainly you're getting, or you're at least lining up a very makeable field goal from Randy Bullock, who inside of 50 certainly has been reliable at the very least. So you're probably getting points, and you're maybe getting a touchdown. I'd say your expected points range there. I don't know the analytical math on that exact scenario. It's probably 4.5, mm-hmm. Right? What is the difference in expected drive on the Steelers in pinning them, even if it's inside the 10, compared to playing out of the 40? It's just not understanding what the league is.
Yeah, I think we've almost gone to a point where I think, you know, 20 years ago you always run the ball there. 20 years ago you always punt on fourth and one. Now it's not unlikely to see a throw on third and one and go for it on four. I think you should go for it almost every time on fourth and one if you're at the 40.
At the plus, yeah. If you're on the plus side of the field, definitely the 40. I mean, I would almost argue anytime on the plus side of the field, particularly if your defense
right
is as beat up as the Bengals was, and your offense is going to have to carry you. I mean, I think that was pretty apparent at that point, and you had momentum of the Erickson. You're looking for the daily double on the deferral daily double was in play,
right?
Two Erickson kick returns as well, and there you are. They've been good on fourth downs this year.
Yeah.
You know?
But,
and it's like, what message? Now, just because you got stoned on third and short doesn't mean it's going to happen. And in fact, I would venture to say they probably play action and try to throw to CJ or AJ.
Or if I thought there was it is interesting to me that Marvin hinted at, you know, Bill Lazor knows on the third down call. If Marvin would go for it on fourth down in that situation, in that field position. So I'd like to know if maybe Laser might have tried a play action on 3rd and 1 and then maybe run it on 4th and 1.
Yeah.
If you don't complete it. Of course, you can't take a sack. But there's a lot of stuff.
A lot
of ways you could go there. But
yeah, there's a lot of – I mean, we're not going to spend the whole day diving into it, but that's kind of what Marvin Head State's been talked about a lot, and, you know, I think it was an error. It's easy to say that stuff in hindsight. You know, if they had pinned him at the 2 and got the safety or 4, he blocked a punt, who knows. But I just – the way that game was set up, and really the NFL's been played all year this year, an opportunity to get points by getting a yard. I mean, it's different if you're at the 50 or the other 40. Like, you get this, you're pretty much getting points. Like, that's 4 points.
Yeah, and now with defense, it's just about getting off on 3rd down. Mm-hmm. And they were able to do that. The defense was, and hold them to a field goal. So it doesn't matter if the drive starts at the 12 or the 40. You got to stop, get a stop on 3rd down.
Yep. So that was some of that. The last play of the game, much has been talked about, and in general, some of the defensive play calling and stuff like that. I mean, was it an OPI or was it not an OPI?
Did Tony initiate?
Did you order the initiation?
Yes.
The bottom line is, Al Riveron came out. This was Sunday night. So after we had already concluded everything, and said the defender initiated the contact, and that's why the OPI wasn't called, and that was correct to not call the OPI. Marvin Lewis said, "You wrong." He said, "They are wrong in this situation." Tony McCray is sliding over, and the guy runs into him and carries him down the field. And you know, every side, Peter King says this, Terry McCauley says this. Well, Tony Dungy and Rodney Harrison said no, that they're not going to get that call. And then this, and you know, the players say that Tony McCray said it's okay, but William Jackson said no, it wasn't okay. Everybody has a damn opinion on this. And I feel like it ends up being a little bit of much ado about nothing. Like, you put yourself in that situation of needing that play call. You gave up 482 yards. You only touched Ben Roethlisberger once. You didn't create a turnover all day. And now everyone is here obsessing about a call that could have gone either way. You put in the referee's hand. And even if you get it, there's no assurances that they aren't still going to kick a field goal and still beat you and win the game. It's a reason to complain, and we can debate it until we're blue in the face, but if we're pointing fingers, I'm not pointing it at the zebras. I'm pointing it at the coordinator and the defensive players and everybody else that didn't get it done. I hate ref blaming, and even if it's right, I hate ref blaming.
Sorry, I think that was
very aggressive.
I think we're kind of burying the lead here. I think pick plays are an epidemic that are sweeping all levels of football and just ruining the game.
Ruined the game.
It's how Alabama lost to Clemson in that national title. Hunter Renfro, pick play.
Because it's not called.
They don't call it. It's like the basketball game in the final minute. They swallow the whistle.
Yeah.
They don't call it the same way. The end of games,
and here until they start calling it, this is what it's going to look like.
Keep doing it,
and so we were talking to William Jackson.
I liked what he had to say.
I liked William. He said, "I don't know. They just keep making rules for defense,
mm-hmm.
or for offense. Excuse me, nothing for the defense. You know." And it's just like, what else? He said, "What else is Tony supposed to do?"
Yeah, you know? He was in an impossible situation
now. Does he need to be a little bit more understand what's about to come his way and be a little more on inside leverage? Yes. Easy to say looking back on it. And does Darquez Dennard do it? Yeah, probably. But Tony McCray ain't been out there a lot. And, you know, that's what happened.
That all goes into – I thought about the play call a lot. I actually like being aggressive and trying to
– Not cover zero.
But not cover zero. But the reason why I don't like it is because you're playing Big Ben, Antonio Brown.
Correct.
Some savvy there.
Yeah.
And you don't have any – Sean Williams isn't out there. Quez isn't out there. You don't have some of your savvy guys. You've got Tony, who's inexperienced. So,
exactly. Well, and I think that's part of it, thinking that you're not putting Tony on the spot for but a half a second.
Yeah.
But that's all you
need. That's all you need.
That's all you need. You just expose yourself so much there. And so anyway, this has been talked about a lot because the play call being what it was. I want to bring in Terrell Austin, and I'm going to tag a little bit of Marv talking about the penalty as well, because I want you guys to be able to hear exactly what they had to say explaining that play, because Terrell kind of defends himself right off the jump when we sat down with him on Monday and the why he did that and his thinking behind everything. And whether you buy that or not, it obviously backfired on Sunday. And then you'll hear a little bit of Marvin Lewis talking about how that was bad by the officials. So anyway, here's defense coordinator Terrell Austin and Marv.
No, we just decided to go after him. I want our guys to play aggressive. We're playing to win, and they had a good play call. And we're trying to go a little bit of a combination on those two, because those two guys have them, and they had a good play for us.
Were you all expecting a run on that play, maybe, to set up a field goal?
I knew they had three timeouts, and I wanted to make sure that they didn't get any more yards. They were right at the fringe of where we thought they were able to kick it. And my thing was, I wanted to get a negative play. I wanted to go after them and make them have to make a decision. Didn't work this time.
It could have been. I mean, if they ran it, you're in good shape. If they throw it, you get pressure.
You get pressure,
and
absolutely.
So it's more ways that it could go well, and unfortunately it didn't.
Yeah, it just didn't. That's kind of how this game is. The one thing I don't ever want to do is I don't want to second guess myself. I don't want our players to second guess themselves when they're out there playing. So we're going to play aggressively. We're playing to win, and I think that at that point that gave us the best chance to win. I didn't want to leave it into the field goal kicker's hands and allow him, because it's not every day you block a field goal.
You've been doing this for a while. Did that mindset come pretty easily for you, where you can live with the results, or did it take a while for that kick in?
Well, you hate that it didn't work. I mean, that's the biggest thing, that the guys played hard. They played really hard, and it was a hard-fought game, a well-played game. And so you hate that it didn't work for our guys, because of the amount of effort that they put into it. But I think that's how you have to play it in this league. If you play and you play conservatively all the time, you're going to – you may not reap the rewards.
It seems everybody in the country has an opinion on whether that was offensive pass interference. I'm curious your opinion on it.
Yeah, the receiver's more than a yard from the line of scrimmage. Tony's trying to slide inside and he's contacted. So again, that defines pass interference off OPI. So, but again, unless it's called, it doesn't matter.
Al Riveron said that the defender initiated contact.
And that's not true. It's not, in my opinion, that's not true. So, but again, it doesn't matter.
How can you teach that? I mean, how do you try to teach that going forward?
Again, we're not going to explain strategy in here.
So if it's more than a yard, it doesn't matter who initiates what contact, right?
I think what Al's explanation, from what I understood, was what Al said, that he felt like that our guy was there at the line of scrimmage and put hands on their guy, but our guy's back off the line of scrimmage, to begin with, and then backs up, but anyway, it's over. It's not going to change anything. It's not coming back. So, we got to move on. In situations like that, that's plays they had run in the past. We understand that. The crew understands that. They've seen it. And it's been called, and we just got to do, a great job of defending those type of plays, because they come up throughout the year, and we got to do a really good job of understanding it, and making sure we defend it better the next time around.
What were your thoughts on what Terrell had to say defending aggression? I mean,
I appreciated what he said.
Yeah.
And he's stuck up for the players. I think he's pretty much proven himself on that front. So again, I think that just like the 4th-and-1 call, what's going to be your highest percentage play here? You got to get Chris Boswell out there on the field. I know he's never missed in the PBS. Mm-hmm. But he hasn't connected on a field goal longer than 40 all season, right?
Yeah.
And it was kind of rainy. I think you got to get him out there.
Yeah, you've got to make him prove it. That was my whole thing, is you had to make them. Even if they had three plays, I mean, he said, well, it's a lot of plays. Well, potentially. I mean, were you going to continue zero blitzing?
Right.
And I get you're trying to create a negative play. I just, you know, you've got to. I think that they were so focused on counting Boswell's as going to be good from, you know, if they get the ball to the 25. I think they were too focused on, they gave him too much credit. And I don't think they had a true understanding of the nerves that would have been associated on the Pittsburgh sideline of having to ship Boswell out there. I don't think they gave that enough credit.
Yeah, but
didn't
you
see
can't
the big picture of that.
But you can't allow, like, this isn't Ryan Tannehill, no offense. You know, he gets bragged on too much. This is Big Ben. He knew exactly what was going to happen. It's Antonio. You can't let Ben throw a pass to Antonio Brown and beat you there like that.
Any other way. On the day, Ben against when blitzed, 12 of 14 for 185 yards, NFL rating of 142, average about, that's like 13 yards-ish per attempt. His average yards per attempt when not blitzed was like 5 and change, rating of about 70-some. Sit back and let him throw into your coverage. Maybe you get a tip ball. Maybe your four make it home, although they hadn't all day. So I get that aspect of it. I get maybe bring a little bit. I completely exposing yourself. Have some guys back in coverage. I mean, that's where you can get your play. You know, the two biggest defensive plays they made this year against Indy and Baltimore. How did they go down? A guy in the secondary, Clayton Fedulum and Hardy Nickerson, made a hit on Doyle, forced a fumble. Right. Sean Williams comes around the far end on a coverage sack. Flacco had all day. But it was flushed and came around and caught him from behind. Some of these huge defensive plays have not come because they've just gone after it. I mean, it's come because they've been able to cover, or they've gotten a play downfield somewhere, or caused it. You know, I get wanting to be aggressive, but I feel like there was too much credit giving. Oh, yeah, Bob, they're inside field goal range. Yeah, no, I think that was part of the problem. Let's flip this forward. We don't want to keep looking back, make people
bury it.
It's over. So let's, well, sort of, because what happened in the past does affect the future now as we look at everyone's favorite topic. That is, let's play judging Vontaze Burfict's intent. You're new to this. This is like a weekly occurrence, I feel like, around here, because he's constantly under fire. So ask Marvin Lewis about that. About the one that's been most out there has been the shoulder, elbow, forearm shiver to the head of Antonio Brown. It's basically out there that Tez is not going to be suspended. I would expect a fine coming his way for that. But there's so much other stuff has now popped out. You know, he, according to Ben Roethlisberger in his interview, was at the line the next play after he took that shot, headhunting Brown, pointed to Juju and said, "You're next." If you don't know the background behind that, then you can read my story that was up on Sunday morning about how crazy their history has been. You know, there was lots of things being alleged. There was a headshot to James Conner. He was clearly headhunting, right?
Right.
I mean.
And then Marvin, of course, says, I'm going to paraphrase him. He said, you know, we're always asking about things number 55 does.
Not
what anybody else does. How about if he stops doing things that we have to ask about?
Right. If any player, like when Sean Williams did something that got him ejected and we were wondering about suspensions, we asked about that. We were talking about that a lot.
And Sean Williams, to his credit, came and faced it and spoke to you guys too.
And was great on the topic. And that's fine. That did not happen because it never happens with Fontes. Because it's always some ridiculousness. Now, granted, Steelers are going to make accusations. They obviously don't. They hate him, you know. And the thought amongst, I think, a lot of Bengals fans is, yeah, he's got his warts, but he's worth it. And he makes a fair amount of plays, but there's just so much other garbage that comes along with him. It's just fair to wonder how much is worth it, you know? And so in the locker room, we mentioned this briefly in the walk-up, but we did not go into it. And I actually would like to play the audio because you have the audio of what happened in the locker room. Vontez blew off reporters, chose not to speak. That's fine. He has that right. He does not need to talk to us. This is not what this is about. So a reporter from Pittsburgh is obviously just trying to ask about the hit on Antonio and is talking to Drake Kirkpatrick. Drake Kirkpatrick is in a little media scrum and asks if he was it the question if he thought he should be suspended.
Yeah, he said, do you anticipate he'll get suspended?
And that kind of started.
Well, it was like a chain reaction because a concussed Sean Williams came by at this time and sort of set this into motion, I believe.
Okay.
Because Dre basically said what Marvin said, which is, Dre's doing something else on the play. He didn't see it. I don't know.
Mm-hmm.
Sean Williams, though, goes, it's football. People hit people.
Yeah.
And he yelled it. And so now it's sort of like we got ourselves a commotion.
Right.
And then Tez showed up.
Tez showed up.
Well, it was like, Sean goes into the training room. Tez, about 20 seconds later, Tez comes out of the training room. It was almost like Sean went in there and said, hey, they're asking about you. Because Tez came out immediately and said, what are they saying, Dre? What are they saying?
Right. So Sean goes in there and says something like they're talking about you. Like, well, they wanted to ask him.
Right.
And he chose not to talk, so they were just asking others at that
point.
But then
Dre.
Because that's what happens when you don't talk, by the way.
Well, Dre's trying to turn it down now because Dre goes, I got you. He's like, I got you.
Yeah.
But it was too late.
It was too late. So let's just play the audio. I am bleeping out the N-word when it appeared twice, right?
I believe so.
So I'm bleeping out the N-word in here. So here's what happened.
Are you worried that you're going to lose Vontez to another suspension?
For what?
Like
there
was a helmet on Antonio, bro.
It's football. We gotta see what they call, but man, the dude just played football. You know, I don't think that was intentional. I didn't even see it. Obviously, you just brought it up to me. Well, he just played football, man. They gotta relax a little bit, you know, give them a chance with content and really evaluate the.
What they say,
Jerry?
What they say, Jerry?
I got you.
Man,
I got you. I got you, bro. At the end of the day, man, y'all just gotta do it. Team work. Get the penalty. You know, hopefully they evaluate it properly and just not just throw the book.
So I mean, you know, this is we try to take you behind the curtain a little bit here on the podcast. I mean, there's a little bit of inside baseball to this. I mean, players blow up in locker rooms. I really don't honestly have a huge problem with. I've been yelled at. I'm sure you've been yelled at. Everybody that probably all the people that were standing in that scrum at some point in time have been in the middle of something with somebody. Like that's what this job is. Like. It happens. Guys are frustrated. Players are frustrated. We have to ask questions that might frustrate them more. Coming out of the training room when you didn't talk, yelling some stuff, and, you know, this reporter's just like, well, would you like to talk about it? You know? And
he kept walking.
No, he doesn't want to talk about it. Has not talked about anything, really. Hey, he's allowed to do that, allowed to have that opinion, but that's a glimpse of what you get. Right, and that's not just with us. This type of stuff is happening on the field. There was a play when James Conner was the touchdown. What would have been a touchdown that around the corner? Tez just quits. They get around the edge. He doesn't make it around the edge, and as soon as Conner goes up the sideline, Tez just quits. And it was a 25-yard run. Like he went 25 more yards downfield. If that thing cuts across or somebody makes a hit and the ball gets cut loose, how many times we praised we've praised a number of guys when you catch guys from behind that end up making big plays. We see it all the time, and it's about hustle. And then there was another time. Now, they claim they were checking his shoulder, right? The play where he misses the tackle on the tight end. He kind of signals himself out, right? And it's okay, well, if you're hurt, he just sat on the bench and didn't alert anybody for like six plays. Yeah. I don't think anybody knew he was hurt. If they were supposed to, I mean, they always get over quickly to people. There was no one over there by him. He wasn't alerting anyone. There was no reason to know that he just checked himself out and was like, screw it. I'm not playing.
Well, it just feels like no matter how big or small, we're always having to pay attention to Tez. Like,
is that us? Like, because here's the question. Like, Marvin would contend that's our fault.
That's our fault.
We're paying too much attention to what he's doing, and this type of stuff happens everywhere. But I don't see this type of stuff happening all over the place. And how much effect does it have on the team? I don't know.
Well, it's like, you know, Ben Roethlisberger has a QB sneak. It's a pretty normal play in a game. All of a sudden, we're watching Tez and Ben going back and forth. Mm-hmm. Or James Conner on the run, Tez quits. Or that the play where Tez taps out comes out, he had missed it. That was a long gain.
Mm-hmm.
There's a lot going on in all these plays, but then you're just focused on Tez.
Yeah. And I don't, you know, how much of a distraction is that? Because it doesn't matter that we spend too much time talking about it or national media talks about it. There's a lot of dirty play happening. How much is any of that affecting this team's ability to win or lose is all that should matter to the Bengals, because none of the rest of it matters.
Right.
Like, no matter how many people tweet, get this guy out of the league, no matter how many Steelers players say the NFL needs to do something about him and get rid of him and make accusations of all kinds of stuff that he yelled and said and did. No matter how that, none of that matters from a Bengals perspective. Is how much of a distraction is he, and is that a plus? Is he a plus because of his plays, or does he end up on the minus side because of all the rest of the stuff?
Yeah, well, it's like the Kanye West thing.
It's just like Kanye.
Just like this.
This is just like Kanye West.
No, you can be as outlandish as you want. You can be rude, or you can be wrong. If the music's dope.
Yeah.
If the music's really good.
Yeah.
And it stays really good. But if you stay outlandish and your music starts sort of just being okay,
mm-hmm.
you're done. We don't need that. We don't need this anymore. That's what you're thinking. Same with Tez. Is he playing to the level where you are okay with having to deal with all this other stuff?
They don't have a whole lot of choice right now.
Right. He's with Nick lucky. Vigil going out.
With Vigil out now for a month and the rest of the linebackers problematic, yeah, they are a bit in a corner here. If they were getting better linebacker play,
we saw some really funky things in that game whenever there were some four linebacker sets.
Yeah.
We saw Sean Williams playing
nickel
corner.
I mean, they were so banged up. I mean, it was just all over the place, and they were trying to focus on stopping the run and couldn't.
Yeah.
They were forced to do a lot of different things that put them in a bad spot. So, anyway, that's enough on the perfect side of things. To me, there's a moral dilemma for Bengals fans. Like, they always want to defend. I don't know how you look at some of this stuff and defend him. Look, the conversation that we just had is the one that Bengals fans need to have. Yeah, it ain't all right. But we're just taking his play because we just need to have the best guys out there that we can. We think we can still win games despite the other garbage. Willing to put up with it. Because that's where the team's at with it. Time to wrestle the bear, right?
I don't think the music's that good right now.
Yeah, and Lord knows what will happen on Sunday Night Football with the Nationals. The Nationals, can I just predict Vontaze Burfict is a jerk column from like five national dudes on Monday morning? So predictable. It's the most predictable thing you'll see.
Yeah.
Coming. Okay. PFF time. I mentioned the blitz numbers and things like that earlier. Let's jump in with Austin Gale real quick as we talk a little bit about some of the other numbers that PFF turned out and some scary Chiefs stuff that is very scary. All right. Well, here's Austin Gale.
All right. It's that time. We go to PFF over and over the Rhine, and that means going to our man, Austin Gale. Austin, how are we doing?
Doing great, man. You know, trying to rally from this loss. A lot of good numbers to look at.
There are a lot of good numbers to look at. Earlier in the podcast, I was talking a little bit about the Bengals defense blitz breakdown and how when they blitzed Ben Roethlisberger, he just absolutely torched them. What were some other numbers that you saw that surprised you coming out of this game?
Yeah, absolutely. And you look at the blitz rate and specifically why Ben Roethlisberger was able to, you know, as you said, torch them is they failed to create pressure. Geno Atkins had a very underwhelming day. He ended up earning one of the lowest single game grades of his career. And you look at other players along that defensive line, they were not able to create pressure. And even when they dialed up the blitz, which they did a fair amount, and even on the last play, obviously, or not the last play, but the play that ended it all, they just weren't able to get hit home. And when your blitzes aren't hitting home, that's when quarterbacks are really going to be able to pick you apart. Because more often than not, you're on one-on-one coverage, and regardless of how good your secondary is, in one-on-one coverage against good receivers like Juju Smith-Schuster, Antonio Brown, you know, Ben Roethlisberger is going to be able to, you know, stand in the pocket, you know, even take some minor pressure and find open receivers.
Yeah, they blitzed Ben Roethlisberger 14 times, but on the day, they only had two quarterback hits, and both of those were on one play. It was Andrew Billings and Michael Johnson sandwiched Ben Roethlisberger. It was the one time that they were able to even get a hand on it. We're going to talk about sacks, just getting a hand on them. They had some pressures, and they flushed occasionally. But you're right, you mentioned Geno Atkins. That's when it's shocking, because he has been so good, was leading the NFL in pressures. On the Bengals' offensive side of the ball, what numbers popped up from Sunday?
Tyler Boyd turned in a very outstanding performance. He has zero drops on the season. He's one of the most consistent targets on third down. He ranks second in the NFL, or tied for second, rather, in total targets on third or fourth down, and he still ranks tied for seventh in first down percentage when targeted on third or fourth down. Tied for seventh with A.J. Green. Cincinnati Bengals have two of the most efficient receivers on third and fourth down this year, and Tyler Boyd is one of them. Now his overall grade ranks inside the top 10 among all receivers in the NFL. It's really time to start considering him a legitimate threat. I think he's great in the slot. He's a great route runner. You're starting to see all the things you saw at Pitt, and he's carrying it to the NFL. And I mentioned that a little bit last week. And I think it even went even more forward this week. I think Tyler Boyd is going to be a name to watch moving forward.
Yeah, and you know, in the past, you looked at his slot percentage number was very high, but now as they have him on the outside more and really moving everyone around, I mean, A.J. Green's slot percentage has never been higher because they're moving him inside more. It's really a lot of interchangeable parts. So Tyler Boyd, you know, even just looking at the percentage of time he spends in the slot, he's proving he's not just a slot guy this year, that he is assuming that number two role. I think the numbers certainly bear that out. One of my favorite things is looking at absurd, gaudy Kansas City Chiefs numbers this year, and because there are plenty of them. What sticks out the most from your guys' analytics when you look at Kansas City and the insane offensive show that they've been this year?
Patrick Mahomes' ability to move outside the pocket on the run, make big time throws, make accurate downfield throws is absurd. It's honestly better than anyone in the NFL right now, and it's a large reason why they're able to put up so many points against pretty much any team in the NFL. You know, you combine that with Tyreek Hill, who is easily one of the best receivers in the NFL, if not playing like the best receiver in the NFL right now. It's great after the catch. A burner down the sideline, has a great catch radius despite his small frame. His leaping ability is far underrated. He's a small guy, but the guy can jump through the roof. I think this team has just so many weapons, and when you have a quarterback that can make any throw on the field, that includes outside the pocket, inside the pocket, under pressure, he can make any throw on the field. When you have Hunt, you know, Travis Kelce, you know, Tyreek Hill, Sammy Watkins even, it's really hard to stop this Chiefs team. It's going to be a very big test for the Bengals secondary and the Bengals front line to get pressure and affect Mahomes if they're going to want a chance.
Yeah, I mean, it's a big bounce back week from a pressure perspective. I mean, you just went into those pressure numbers and how poor they've been. That's really the only way to keep up with Kansas City is for those numbers to look more like they did against Miami and then some of the other games earlier this year. It's funny, is that you go to all those people, we talk about all those things now with Patrick Mahomes, but we don't talk much about Kareem Hunt. His success rate on carries this year is higher than anybody else in the NFL. It's like 60% of the times when he carries the ball, it's for what's considered success.
Yeah, and Kareem Hunt is just a beneficiary of a fantastic offense. He's running the ball in an offense where the defense is always playing the pass, and that's always going to pay him the success rate. Yes, he's very good at forcing the tackles in the offensive line. He's been able to create more than what the offensive line provides him, but when you're looking at success rate, him being able to gain, which normally is a percentage of 60% or above on, you know, on first down, and half the gain on second down or whatever, it goes down through the downs, he's able to do that largely because teams are so scared of Patrick Mahomes right now that they're going to beat him deep. Tyreek Hill's going to take over. And it just allows Kareem Hunt to pick on an easy defense and empty boxes. I think the Bengals can't afford to let Hunt get going early, but at the same time, the more lethal threat is always going to be Mahomes. They just create a defensive, you know, game plan that is just so hard to master and execute.
Absolutely. Great stuff, Austin. Again, everybody, you've got the Edge, you've got the Elite, and so much more going on at PFL. What's some other content you guys have up on Saturday?
Yeah, Edge and Elite subscribers, it's always a good thing. However, I want to, you know, highlight Greenline. It's a new product that we've got for, you know, high-stakes players that do like to bet against the spread. We had a very, very good week in week six, and we're going to continue to trend up as, you know, we start to get a larger sample size and look at, you know, wins over this season. I think it's going to get better. I think all Elite subscribers have access to Greenline. I definitely would get in early.
Because if you get in and you go through Greenline, you make enough money to cover the cost. You don't even have to worry about that cost. That's just a part of doing business.
Boom. That's just a perfect investment when you really look at it.
Yeah, absolutely. That's great, Austin. Thanks for the time. We'll talk to you next week.
Sounds great. Thank you.
Okay, let's keep it rolling here on the BBP. Always great to hear from Austin Gale. If you get a chance, if you like the Bengals, you like the NFL, you want to know more about the game that you're watching, man, there's so much good stuff in there. We try to jump in there with the deep dive every Tuesday and give you some of that stuff, but you can go. There's so much good stuff in there, great content. Give them a shot. All right, let's I feel like there's always so much negativity. And don't worry, Optimistic Bobby will be back on Thursday. We need him to come in and spread his love, and I want to hear about how his laser cats fared through the rain. I hope the stuffed animals didn't get moldy or anything like that.
I want to meet Optimistic Bobby.
You will. We're working on the next live BBP. We'll get down there. You'll love him. But I want to say this. This may shock some people from Paul Downer Jr., as I've been called, known to be called. Which, by the way, I had someone on Twitter at me that they wish that more media loved the team that they covered, like Dave Lapham, and not hated them like me. First of all, I don't hate the team. I try to be real with you fans, so you know if we're talking about it being bad, we're honest that it's bad. If we're talking about it being good, you know you can believe that it really is good, that it's not always good. It's not always good. The positives. This is not the spin zone. This is not Bengals.com. This is not any the work that they do over there is fantastic. It is different. They are restricted to do what we do, and what we are is the real. We try to be the real insight from the inside and keeping it real with you.
This is just like Batman. All right. Sometimes you write long enough to become the villain. You know?
It's fair enough. I love it because I've been accused of the other side.
Oh, Homer.
I'm a Homer. It is a great week for me if I'm accused of being a Homer and hating
the team. Same time. Yeah.
That means I'm doing it right. But anyway, here's the reason I mentioned that is I have a lot of optimism coming out of Sunday for this team.
God, you're a Homer.
I'm such a Homer. I really do. I look at what happened. And this was not like other Bengals-Steelers game. And I really, the sense of belief in this team, and I know people are sick of me talking about it, but it was evident. They did not melt down like they always do against us. That was not a meltdown. That was a good team overcoming another good team making good. It was two good teams making plays on top of each other, not a team taking advantage of another one melting down. That is not what it was. I looked at what happened with the offense. I look at what you're seeing continually to see from Andy Dalton in a league dominated by the quarterbacks. You know, to me, it's all going to come down to whether this defense can get life figured out or not. But I think the rest of it, from team mentality to the way they played to what this offense continues to be, even despite a lot of injuries they're seeing over there too, and the makeup of this team, I still have a whole lot of belief that they can eventually get there. In the preseason predictions, I didn't think they would be ready to take the jump just yet. I thought by the end of the season, they'd be close. And I still think week 17 is what this is going to be all about. Revisiting the inability to get over the Steelers problem for something, for the division, for making the playoffs, for a seeding, all three. And it's gonna. I think it's gonna come down to that because I think both these teams will play themselves to the spot that that is what it will be. They are one beat up Atlanta Falcons defense away from exactly what we thought they were. They got that win in Atlanta, gave that little extra jump, so they're 4-2 instead of 3-3 right now. They're 5-3 at the break, which they probably project to be, if all things fall as they probably should. I think you feel good about a young team. New coordinators, all that crap.
Injuries,
everything that you've been at. You're 5-3 at the break with a young ascending team that a bunch of players that should be about to take a huge step in the second half of their second or third seasons. What you've gotten from Tyler Boyd, I think they're in a great place to eventually avenge this Steelers thing in Pittsburgh in week 17. And make a pretty impressive run late in the season and end up with 10 wins. I did not see a team that wilted, that doesn't have what it takes like we've seen the last X number of years where it was always the Steelers just waited for the poise to leave the Bengals and them to just lose it and not have the mental ability to hang in there. That's why I think it was – I think it looked different. And I don't – I mean, we'll save this for Thursday, but you can. I don't think they're going to win in Kansas City, but I don't think that's a game changer. I think they're situationally screwed this week. Some weeks that happens. Injuries to the wrong team against the wrong team, to the wrong players against the wrong team. But I know you don't have past reference there, but I mean, just watching it, I don't think you could watch that and be like, man, Bengals, really? Did it again. They melted down. It wasn't like that. They did lose. It was heartbreaking. There were mistakes. This was not a meltdown.
No, I think the defense getting holding two field goals in the red zone, especially the goal line stand, was a major plus. And then Andy Dalton and the offense struggle as they did in the second half. They're able to mount another potential game-winning drive. I think Andy, you know, Doc's calling him Elevation Man. Cause
oh, yeah, I love it.
He's elevating that offense when it matters. So, yeah, I think there's some encouraging things. It's just that, you know, obviously the 4th-and-1 and the cover zero, that's what's going to be sort of the story of the day for this game forever. But I think you're right. I think that there was some promise shown there.
Yeah.
It wasn't the loss didn't come because of a sideshow.
As much as we just talked about the perfect sideshow. Right. But I don't think he was the reason it wasn't the reason they lost. You know?
No.
I mean, I don't. He was his normal sideshow, which we discussed, that you just are living with right now. I wanted to make sure that optimism got out there. I don't want this to be the Downer Jr. show. I actually, despite everything that we needed to talk about and get into about this team where they're at, I have a positive outlook. I thought if we're on the spectrum, I'm at like 58 in positive feelings to negative feelings, 58 to 42 coming out of that tilt.
I still think that the Bengals are the better team.
They do need to win a tilt though. Yeah, well, and they think they're the better team, as they said, many of them said.
Yes.
Much to their mocking from national folks who like to mock such
whatever
things. Yeah. All right. I want to remind everybody, I mentioned Optimistic Bobby, how we're going to get down to 50 West. You finally
I did it.
Picked up a pop.
I That's right.
A coast to coast.
Well, you know how it is after covering a long Steelers-Bengals Sunday.
You need one.
You got to bring yourself back down a little bit.
Yep. So you did the coast to coast after the game?
I did.
And you thought?
I tell you what, it's a little bit of trouble because I just wanted one or two. I ended up having to have three.
You know, well, it's understandable. It does happen. I actually had a punch you in the IPA after the game because I only had time to have one because I needed to get some sleep. My daughter's not been sleeping very well. She has an ear infection, so I needed to get to bed, but I also needed to wind down, so I go for the 9.2% punch you in the IPA to get right to a business.
Wow, yeah. 9.2.
Boom, hammer it, fall asleep.
Sounds like Ben Roethlisberger's yards per attempt against the blitz.
9.2? No, man. You can only get the 13.1, the small one. That would be wine. He was a fine wine, for sure. All right. Let's get to three questions here.
It's my favorite time of the week.
Is it your favorite time of the week? Do you have any good ones that you wanna throw in before we start going through some other ones?
There's a video of me circulating where John Calipari is tickling me on Twitter.
Is that real?
Somebody asked, yes, why is John Calipari tickling you?
All right, that's a good question. Let's start there. Why did John Calipari tickle you?
It was right after the FBI stuff came out, and he said he was, quote, checking me for wires.
But he tickled you.
He touched me. And I didn't ask for it.
How could you have?
I wasn't wearing a wire.
If you would have showed up in that interview and said, John, could you touch my body? Like, I'm pretty sure, A, that would definitely be viral and possibly a fireable offense. There's no way that was how you wanted that to go.
I wasn't offended by him touching me, but I was offended that he would maybe, you know, it was a joke. But, hey, look, I take the years. I'm not going to wear a wire.
Yeah. That's all you need to know about that. So good to know you've been tickled by John Calipari. That's top of the resume stuff right there.
I'll retweet it if anybody wants to.
Yeah. my man Pete Wensler at Bear 1297. Can we just skip to the bye week? The NFL will not allow that. I have looked into it. Sources indicate you cannot. They will have to play the Chiefs.
Got to slug through it.
Bucks, and then get to the bye week. Over under 40 points scored for Mahomes and the Chiefs.
I got to take the under on that just because I got to take the under, but I can see him scoring 38.
Why do you have to take the under?
Guys, I 40 points in an NFL game is crazy.
Is it?
I guess not. Now with all
for
these,
that team?
With all these rules they got.
I mean, it would be above their average.
They're just going to let them pick play all the way down the field.
I would say this defense is below the average that they see. They just scored 40 against Belly.
I'm going to take the under.
On the stepchild later this week. We'll get into that. Westerman Hive is here. See, will they start Westerman ever or anyone else? Redmond stats are awful. Allowing a total of 26 pressures so far this year, which you know via PFF. Second highest among guards in the NFL, which you know because of PFF. There's no way we win big games with this continuing. Thoughts on why they are sticking with him. Is Alex Redmond the reason that they're... The offense isn't even the reason that they're losing games. I mean, for all that happened on Sunday, Andy Dalton was under some pressure. It wasn't ridiculous. Redmond is not great. Is the difference between Alex Redmond and Christian Westerman get even worth a point or two? The staff have clearly decided he is not as good. They've clearly made that.
Well,
I mean,
actually,
get into that.
Well, yeah, whenever he gets back into the mix, maybe we can talk about some changes here on the line.
Mm-hmm.
I don't think it's going to come from the Westerman, Fisher, all that stuff. Whenever people say, why don't they just make that switch?
Yes.
No.
What is it like for Fletcher to cover the Bengals and never have been asked an AJ McCarron question?
There are so many things on this beat. Like, this is this where people will just casually talk about it on a Wednesday afternoon, and I'm like, what are you guys talking about?
Because this was life. And there will be new things like this. Christian Westerman is kind of the new AJ McCarron a little bit. You never got to experience McCarron guy maybe back. Yeah. It's always possible that McCarron could come back at some point in the future. All right, let's wrap it up on this one because this is going to play into our rank things because power rankings are dumb, so we rank dumb things.
Help us feel safe.
Yeah. So my man Joe Vogel points out that this calls for a return of power ranking as we go to KC. Types of barbecue, ribs, brisket, burnt ends, etc. Types of barbecue sides,
ooh,
baked beans, cornbread, greens, and styles. Give me your, let's just do this. Give me your top two sides.
I got sides?
Sides.
I want to nuance this, but yeah, not for the sides. You know, look, baked beans, macaroni. I like that. You know what? Baked beans are really growing on me as I get into my 30s.
Yeah.
I'm going to put baked beans one.
That is such a terrible idea. Baked beans would be, if we do bottom two, baked beans.
Really?
Worst. I'm not a bean guy. I don't like the beans. I don't like anything about beans. Dude, mac and cheese, that's, and some cornbread.
But I feel like, well, listen, the power rankings are really important for the meat variation for me there. I like all 10 sides potentially there.
You like all chilies.
I like all chilies. I like all corn. I like the cornbread. I like the jalapenos in the cornbread.
The jalapeno cornbread.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Yeah, Eli's has great.
We can keep working
cornbread
down the list, and I would consider that as a number one. As I'm eating whatever it is I'm eating, that's my number one in that moment.
So, speaking of number one, I mean, ribs, brisket.
Now, listen, I love burn-ins. I love them.
Yes.
But I feel like brisket is so important. If I want to know your opposer, I'm going to know after that brisket
that you are not a real barbecue joint.
Brisket is what separates the really, really the great and then the just good.
Yeah. That's fair. That's fair. Here's the thing about Montgomery and ribs that I like, which a lot of people, you know, it's sort of like its own genre a little bit, and it's a lot about the sauce. But a rib that just falls right off the bone is just a sheer delight and incredible. And I'm not as much into the rubs and stuff. I like, you know, that style. Like, KC, I'm gonna eat it. Don't worry. I'm going to Oklahoma Joe's this weekend. We're going to do it. But to me, a good tender rib, like that is the best. And maybe anybody can do that.
No, that's what I was.
I don't think anybody can do that.
I was about to say, that's where I really have respect for restaurant chefs, styles of food, whatever. If I can't replicate it, which I know that I can't do much outside of a peanut butter and jelly sandwich, but whenever I sit down and a rib falls off the bone, I'm like, I can't do this.
No.
I could never make this.
No.
I will pay whatever it is you put down.
Yes.
Because this is special.
So this week, I think we're obviously going to consume. Are you going to eat some ribs in Kansas City?
I'm going hard.
Going hard. So I feel like we both have committed ourselves to rib eating. So the bet for this week to decide who gets to voice with who tells the other one what has to be said before their name in the open should basically be a rib eating contest. I think we're both ready to go in like true carnivores and just destroy Kansas City. So true rib eating contest, whoever eats the most ribs over the course of the weekend. When do you land?
So I'm Saturday early afternoon.
Me too. Perfect. We're going to have every meal together probably, I would assume.
Is there a rib counting app?
We're going to need an app or a third-party judge. My man Sam is on the – Sam is our photographer this weekend. Maybe we'll put Sam in charge of counting up the ribs and keeping track. He's our man app.
I wonder how Sam feels about hanging out with two guys with the meat sweats.
Two guys having, if you're the third wheel in a two-man rib eating contest, yeah, that's a really bad spot, especially when one of them loves baked beans. That's all I know about that.
That's the worst take I've had since I got here.
All right, you get all this is what you get at the OG. All right, so I hope y'all enjoyed the new open where Fletcher's name was said correctly.
Thanks to Antonio Brown.
Thanks to Antonio Brown. You'll always be connected to that. If you have any ideas for things you'd like us to bet on, going forward, feel free to let us know. Maybe that'll be the new thing. You guys let us know what you would like us to bet on or go in on to decide, or things you would like to be said before someone's name. Or perhaps you just want me called Paul Downer Jr. every time. I don't know. Whatever it is, let us know at Paul Downer Jr., at Fletcher Page, hashtag BBP. We'll be back with the Stepchild on Thursday. Optimistic Bobby will be here to try to cheer everybody up. And plenty more looking ahead to Kansas City after we preview what is going to be a pretty wild week. Because Kansas City is the toast of the NFL. And we'll be talking a lot about Pat Holmes and, oh, what could have been for the Bengals. Oh, Pat Mahomes, you could have been here. Instead, John Ross is playing wide receiver.
I told y'all the music isn't very good.
A beer.
Oh, nice.
I just made that up on the spot.
Good. That was good.
I know. People have like, wow, turn it off. This is terrible. Why do I even listen to you? You're the worst. Yeah. I don't disagree. All right. Thanks, everybody, for listening. Keep blocks to saying.com. Get your Inquirer Bengals app. We'll talk to you next week.